From Studio Live in Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast, where we explore the culinary adventures of the Comox Valley and Vancouver Island. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
I'm Darren Howlett, and here we are on our 96th episode. 100th is coming up, John.
Getting close to it.
Yeah.
And we got a guest in tonight, which everyone will most likely remember, and we'll definitely be having him come back for our 100th episode.
I'll be here.
We got Blaine Prost with us.
Hey.
Hey. How you doing, Blaine?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah. Well, we thought we had some issues lining up some guests. We've got a couple people lined up to come up here that are opening a new place in downtown Courtney.
Right.
At the last minute, they fell a little behind, and they're trying to open tomorrow, and weren't able to make it in here. So.
Honestly, when they were talking about the possibility of being here, the night before their grand opening, I was like, it's not going to happen, and that's all right. Like, there's never. You can never make it out when you're just trying to get a place open.
Yeah.
So there's always next month.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or the month after.
Exactly.
Or 2 years from now. Yeah. We'll get it done.
Yeah.
There was one thing I wanted to bring up and
sure.
Blaine was available and I thought it was kind of fun is I got an email. Actually, I did a survey back in January. I think it was for the Restaurant of Canada's 6th annual 2015 Canadian Chef Trend Survey.
Okay.
So they did a survey and they asked, I think it was about 400 chefs.
I think I remember you filling this out. I remember you talking about some of the answers you threw in.
Oh, yes. They got 404 chefs participated.
Wow.
And so this is chef owners,
right?
Executive chefs, sous chefs, blah, 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 blah. Anyone who felt like filling out 400 questions on a survey jumped in on this one. And it's just kind of interesting to sort of see what is happening out in the market and sort of see the thought process behind some of the chefs in town. Not in town, but across Canada.
Across Canada.
Yeah, so it's like a nationwide thing.
So this is all things that what's coming up, what's in vogue, what's new, what the focus of all these restaurants are?
Yeah, well, it's what chefs are thinking about right now, when they're doing they're planning their menus and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting to look the difference between last year and this year and sort of see how things have changed a bit. And I just thought it'd be fun for us to sort of debate a little bit about it. So
what do you have on that list? What are some of the things?
You know what? Let's start off with number one, and I'm going to do a 2015 and 2014 comparison. And so, like 2014, the big thing was gluten free,
right?
And we all know gluten free, and I think gluten free was actually there for a few years,
yeah, right.
And I know Blaine definitely was a big
I'm trendy.
You were ahead of the curve there a little bit, yeah. I think. Doing your paleo diet and that. You still doing that?
Not as much.
No.
It's so hard with a baby to eat perfect.
No kidding.
But, yeah. You know, we're still conscious.
Yeah.
We just cheat way up more often.
Come by for burritos once in a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this year, the whole theme has sort of turned over a little bit, and it's about craft beers and microbreweries.
Really? That's the number one?
That's the number one thing for the hot trends for this year, which makes a lot of sense, because, and especially in our community here, because our breweries have been popping up, and we have 3 breweries in town now.
Yeah.
And so it's huge, right? So.
Yeah. And I think we're a bit of a microcosm. I can't say that speaks to what's going on in Canada, but if you look at, I just have a different perspective from years ago when I managed and then owned nightclubs. Back when I was doing that, I had 7 competitors in town. I had 7 other night spots that were also doing things. And slowly, one by one, they all just went away. They either called it a day or shut down or what have you. And right now, there's only actually 2 viable spots for nightlife. But that created a vacuum, right? So now there's all of a sudden this emptiness of things to do out at night. But it's also like that was also in response to what was going on. People didn't want to go out and do that anymore. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do something different. And this is what I think is happening here. And again, like I said, I don't think that speaks Canada wide, but that's definitely the microcosm of what's going on in our town. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see even a few more pop up because people have sort of spoken out with by patronizing the places that they want to go to, which is they want to go to these little microbrew brew pubs
mm-hmm.
rather than out, you know, drinking at a nightclub. It's like, that's, we've just shifted. That's what people want now. So
yeah.
And I think like I foresee at least a few more popping up over the next few years for sure.
Yeah.
I kind of see that too. I look at it as a thing if it's about flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel that a microbrewery or craft beer and stuff like that, it's no longer your traditional lager flavor.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your ale. It's not, because most of those all kind of blurred into the whole, the same thing. Each beer looked the same. Each one kind of tasted the same. And now you get to these microbreweries and they're all doing different flavors. So the one's more hoppy, one's more sweet, you know, and you're getting this different, and it's not expensive like wine.
Right.
So it's a neat way to go out and have a little bit of sip and sample of something and just experience food and drink. Right?
Yeah, it's not as expensive as wine, but it's becoming as nuanced as wine, right? Yeah. Whereas you can pick up, I mean, you don't go to a liquor store and see a variety of like six or seven wines. I mean, there's literally hundreds and hundreds, and they all have their place. They all have a distinct flavor, and there's a reason why they're there, which is definitely what's happening with beers. I think it's always been there. We're just starting to embrace that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
Anyways, I'm going to continue down this list, and I'm actually looking between the two sides. They're pretty close. The things we get, like locally sourced foods, that's two, leafy greens, smoking, charcuteries, or as I like to say, cold cuts.
And
we move down to six. Gluten-free is still on there.
Right.
It's still a concern to people. We got quinoa, which is funny because in 2014, quinoa was number two.
Right.
So, you know, it's moving its way. Quinoa is still something that's out there. And I think quinoa is more than just quinoa. I think it's like ancient grains and doing those kind of fun different foods. Sustainable seafood, which is a new one. And that's been something that's been on my thoughts for the longest time.
Yeah, it definitely deserves a place on that list for sure.
I feel heartbroken in some ways because I remember when I started cooking and Blaine was there beside me, I seem to remember.
Yep.
And, you know, the cuts of fish that we would get have changed. And it used to be, you know, your more expensive, high-quality lobster and halibut and all that was your premium fishes, and that's what you were selling.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, we've kind of gone down the ladder a little bit, and those things have been overfished or they're too pricey in that. So now we're starting to use lower fish that maybe wasn't as considered as high quality. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
But we're sort of moving into like snapper and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they're enjoyable. I think they're wonderful. Lingcod is one of my favorite fish.
Me too.
You know, like it's
snapper and lingcod are my two favorite fish. I mean, I'm like, I prefer them over halibut, always have.
But if you ever went into a restaurant 20 years ago and tried to get lingcod or snapper, they were kind of like, no.
You might have got lingcod and battered in beer batter and fish and chips.
Right.
Exactly. That was about it.
Yeah. So that it's neat that those, that sort of regeneration. And, you know, like herring was had a bit of a coming back. And I don't know if anyone's still moving on that one. But, you know, some of that. But it's sustainable and sort of checking out what you can, what you can eat and not destroy the environment, you know, it's easy to forget. Right?
And the fishing methods too, cod or hand line versus drag nets or seine nets, that kind of stuff too, is on people's minds more and more too, because it's getting out there, the actual process of gathering this fish and, you know, and farmed fish is, you know, people, especially around here in this coast, do not like eating farmed fish. It's all shipped out of here.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's
And I'm like, I think we've talked about it or touched on it in the past too. It's just, I'm not against farmed fish because I mean, there's a market for it and I get it. And there's a reason why it's there. And there's a reason I'm not against it, but I can understand locals being against it for sure, because we have this, you know, it's just counter to what we have naturally growing here and what we have naturally going on. So, I prefer at every turn to have wild and fresh caught, but I understand the need for farmed. It's just whatever. Yeah.
It's all great debates, you know.
Yep.
I would love to have some fish farmers on here and just have that conversation about
for sure
what's happening. Because you know what? That's the industry has changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
And not that I'm trying to be pro for it and why I would. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be totally against it. You know, it's an interesting, subject to debate, right?
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
But let's keep on this list. Yeah. Inexpensive and underused cuts of meat.
Right.
Which I'm a little suspicious on because all those are getting really expensive now.
I know.
Yeah.
I actually, again, nothing of any great significance. Somebody the other day said they ordered a pulled pork option at the restaurant versus the beef, and they were really disappointed to find out that we didn't offer a beef option anymore in what they were having. And he seemed somewhat savvy, and he seemed somewhat like it wouldn't be lost on him to go into the explanation. If somebody's not going to be listen to it, I wouldn't go into it. But I just said, look, we had a great beef product before, and it, you know, it was great, it was consistent, very flavorful, but the prices skyrocketed, and the only way we could keep it on the menu would be to triple charge the end user, being you. You with the rates would have been astronomical that ended up getting carried over to you. So they looked for the next best option, and I think that they've actually done better with offering this pork option. Personally, I actually prefer it over the beef. And he said, it's great. I just, I miss that beef. But I mean, that speaks to exactly what's going on. There was something before, which was an affordable cut that you had before that you had on the menu. And then everybody was flocking to it because it was affordable. And now they've priced it into not affordable.
Yep, for sure.
And that's sort of the industry. Like it just, it fluctuates, and one thing becomes popular and then people get sick of it and they switch to something else.
Kale.
So.
Well, it's like,
kale used to, you couldn't give it away, and now it's so expensive.
It was like that with pork belly too.
Yeah.
There was a super successful marketing campaign around bacon and putting it everywhere and everything. And once the fast food outfits started selling it in their burgers, the price of bacon skyrocketed. You know, all the packing houses had it stacked to the ceiling in their freezers because there was such a low demand for it.
Right.
And now bacon's in everything.
Yeah.
And it's its own market.
Yeah.
Pork bellies are its own market. Like there's pork and then there's pork bellies.
Yeah.
Two That's separate crazy. Things. They're traded on the stock market.
It's bizarre.
It's just, to me, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But okay. Continuing down the list, ethnic sauces.
Yeah.
Which I'm always big in. 100% behind. I like different flavors and I like different regions, and it's always a good way to challenge myself.
And I mean, they're all things that we've definitely come across before and what have you, but I like finding them sort of permeate their way into the norm, like the regular, you know, that's good to see. Like I love kimchi. I noticed there was a couple of examples there, like sriracha and kimchi and what have you, and you know, like sambal oolek and all these other, I guess 10 years ago they would have been called exotic, but they're not exotic. They're just sort of embracing other foods from around the world that are now more plentiful and their ways. And I love it. I love that we're adding more flavors, more flavor profiles.
The couple things that I was noticing here that are off are food trucks.
Yeah, they've had their day.
Yeah, is it oversaturated now with food trucks?
Yeah, maybe not. It's catching on locally, but in a whole, I think.
Yeah,
as they've a whole. Been around for a long time in a lot of other cities. So
absolutely, yeah,
they're kind of small beans here.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to be successful, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to be busy or what have you. I just that as far as like a leading trend, they've had their day.
Well, and I think that's the same as what the other one here is, like heirloom fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Which I think now have become more of a standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you go into the grocery store, you see heirloom tomatoes and you see heirloom fruits and you see those kind of things sitting around there. So it's kind of interesting to see those items come up there. So
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, a lot of these trends, some of them have their sort of their bubble bursts. You know, they only last as long as they're going to last, but then others sort of firmly root themselves into what becomes standard. Like, you know, as we're talking about the cuts of meat, they go from being the cheap cuts to all of a sudden they become the expensive or what have you. Fruits and vegetables, yeah. Like whatever is popular of the day, which is, you know, generally a chef will jump onto it because they want to bring in something new and a new flavor, what have you. And then 10 years down the road, every grocery store now has that as a staple.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and I love sort of seeing that. I love seeing where food's going to go, where it's moving towards, where it's trending. Yeah.
Cool.
Anything else you can glean from there?
Well, yeah. One of them, I'm just the charcuterie cold cuts one and house cured meats.
Yeah.
You know, right. That's a trend that I love and I, you know,
yeah.
I would love to see grow and more, you know, the art of curing meat is more yeah. than just buying a pound of bacon at the grocery store, all wrapped in plastic and soaking wet and disgusting. Yeah. If you've had real artisan cured bacon, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, the flavor in that and the texture of it. And
I just started, well, not just, but I guess about 2 months ago, I started picking up or acquiring all the materials I'm going to need. So I'm good to go. I'm ready. Now it's just a matter of, again, alleviating some time, which I've cleared the deck on my schedule so that I can really in do a lot more of these things that I've been talking about for the last however long. But that's something I'm definitely looking forward to. Yeah,
like bacon,
I really want to get into that.
Bacon's quite easy to make. I've been making it for years now. I haven't bought bacon from anywhere else in years.
Really?
Except for Shushu Charcuterie in Victoria.
Right.
And that's the place I kind of learned about.
Right.
You know, really nice bacon. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, you know, a, how do you say it? Salamieri or salamieri? It's a. Mm-hmm. It's the name of basically a butcher shop that does the
curing,
the curing and the processing.
Yeah.
Beyond just breaking, they do break animals down, but they turn it more into artisanal products.
Right.
And making true fermented salamis and
wow.
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That would be a neat business to see in town here.
I'm not
about to do it, but
I've heard some rumors that there are a few people
starting
to step up and try it a little bit.
Yeah.
Someone's talking about someone up in Merville doing it. So.
Oh, interesting.
Good.
I was going to say, maybe I shouldn't say whom, but probably even maybe talking about the same person. But through friends, I was told about a year ago that there was this person that moved to town, probably a year previous to that, and they had bought this little acreage, and they were doing all these fun things. They definitely came from a food background, and one of the things that they were doing is fooling around with a lot of charcuterie.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't selling any, but they were having lots of dinner parties to sort of gauge interest.
Oh, good, yeah.
And then that's sort of leading to the chance that they're going to... Like nice. Now with a full year under their belt of using local products and seeing where they can go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's another challenge with doing that kind of work. You need premium product. You can't just get by with buying packing house commodity pork. You need, you know, you need the heritage breeds and because those are the ones that have the flavor profiles.
Yeah.
So
it's not as much about, seasoning it. It's actually just enhancing the flavor that's already there with the meat. So
sourcing that premium product to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which is a challenge for anyone who wants to do anything in quantity because there's not a lot of it locally. So,
yeah. You know, and I mean, I think it was sort of touched on there. I saw something about, I don't know how they phrased it, like cheese alternatives or cheese.
Oh, that's something I haven't even got to that part on the up and coming. You got that.
Yeah. The up and coming trends. Talking about homemade cheeses, soft cheeses,
ethnic cheeses.
Right.
Yeah.
Like paneer and what have you. I find a lot of people right now, locally, again, embracing that, trying their hand at it. I have been, I know my brother has been, I know that, lots of friends within his circle have been getting into it. And I, you know, just this weekend, Leah and Brian had that cheese making course that I didn't get to go to.
My former mother-in-law was there.
Oh, was she?
Yes. And I dropped by to pick up my daughter and she was making butter, cultured butter.
Wow.
And she was doing some pretty, pretty fun stuff there. Like I was super excited. She had creme fraiche going. She had made her own butter with her own culture. And she was experimenting. She was making some ricotta cheese. And she just had a list of things. She was like,
"Oh yeah, I would have loved to. I mean, fun. I missed the actual event just because of the way things went at work and what have you. Yeah. But I still have his books. I mean, that was a great thing. I mean, I had his books to begin with. I was just hoping to be able to, you know, sit in and actually do it with him right there. But I love the whole idea. I love the idea of just everything about cheese making.
Like, well, I think I think the list kind of points to me, and it kind of feels like the last years, a few years, is that sustainable, but people are interested in trying new stuff, and they're trying new flavors and new combinations, and they're really curious about their food again. And it's no longer, let's see what we can get out of the grocery store. Let's see if it's no longer about making everything the same.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a time that every restaurant had the same menu.
Yeah.
And the same flavors. And you went into a place and you're like, I want a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And everyone had a cheeseburger and fries. And then the next restaurant you went into, you know, everyone had their chicken fingers, you know, and everyone had a chicken Caesar wrap.
Even McDonald's.
Yeah. This is
a little sore point on my side.
Ongoing joke at Atlas is chicken Caesar wrap.
We don't do them.
No, we never will.
Well, you know, it's funny because I like a chicken Caesar wrap. I have nothing wrong with it. I think it's great. Yeah. I love Caesar salad. I'm sorry. It's one of my favorite. It's my favorite salad.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Atlas Caesar salad's my favorite salad.
It's a great one.
Yeah. But I mean, there's lots of places and there's lots of different, like, I like, you know, sometimes like a Caesar salad, like a huge amount of garlic in there, like that burning garlic flavor in there. And Atlas isn't that. But
no, it's off there for sure.
But there's so many different variations, and there's some really good ones, and there's some really bad ones out there too. But in general, I love Caesar.
Yep. It's just a good combination.
Yeah. Even with Clamato juice. Oh, that's a different Caesar.
That's, you know, one of the things that they're, again, talking about upcoming food trends, I think that we've seen this. Again, the Valley is late to get onto some of these trends. These things happen a little later for us than they do for others. But something that's been happening more out east over the last 10 years is stripping down the menu, just going back to smaller and smaller menus. And not because of overhead reasons or whatever, you know, it's definitely because when you only have, say, 20 menu items, people know, or they hopefully will come to know, that you can rest your laurels on those 20 items, because those 20 items you make are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's just it. That's why, those big, heavy, unwieldy menus where there's 98 options, like, I don't like eating there, because I know, to me, it just seems like, well, here, we'll try to please everybody by not doing anything very well at all, but we'll offer everything.
Everyone can get what they want.
Right.
It's not going to be good.
Yeah, exactly. I'd much rather find a place that just says, okay, these are the things that we do, and we do them really well.
Yeah.
And then, and again, I think I haven't even seen the Cornerstone menu. I know that we're going to probably, the next episode or the episode after, we'll have the Cornerstone group in. But I know that that was sort of a topic for them, that they were going to strip it down. They were going to keep it a really short and concise menu. And I applaud them for that, because I love seeing that. I love seeing people say we're so behind our own products. Like, here's only 8 things that we do, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I guess that's more Toronto than here, or more Ontario. But yeah, I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, and it gives the chef more freedom for fresh eats too that way.
Because absolutely.
He's not maintaining that giant menu. It's like, these are easy, then let's play on the other side. And
every day
we can do something fun.
Yeah.
Let's do one good special.
Yeah.
Let's try something out here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, that's what I mean, that's why I'm still at the Atlas, because I have a fresh sheet. So I get and I don't even do it most of the time anymore. You know, I'm the guy who just like, okay, we're going to bring in lamb today.
Yeah, do something with it.
I'm like, you guys figure it out.
Yeah. That's what I honestly, like I said, I've said this before, and it's not lip service. I'm not just saying it because I'm employed there, and we have this conversation before without microphones on. But one of the things that's kept me at Atlas for sure over 7 years, I've worked in lots of places. Fresh Sheets used to be a way to move product that needed to get out the door.
Yep.
And I've lived through that era where that's what the special was. The special was, it's going to go, you know? But I love Atlas that, like, everything that's brought in for the Fresh Sheet, it's brought in for the Fresh Sheet. It's, oh, this is what's in right now, or this just came available. We're going to take that and we're going to turn that into something amazing. And, like, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of other restaurants that are following along that same thing in this area. So,
absolutely.
You know, definitely.
Yeah.
And there's some great talent out there, you know.
Like. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would almost, I can't say, it, I feel bad not mentioning locals at the same time. I definitely, that they are doing the same thing in that they bring in specific things specifically to, you know, to make a fantastic special. Like, it would be a disservice to them to not mention them in the same breath. But like I said, the reason that I've stayed at Atlas for so long is it's food I'm proud of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I assume the same with you. I think that's why you've had such a long career there.
Well, and I think that's what people are looking for out there. Yeah. And I think that's part of the whole microbreweries.
Yeah.
People are looking for they're wanting a beverage that the person who makes it stands behind.
Yeah, you know? For sure. Yeah. And again, you can probably say that of all those trends that's coming up, like everything there, it's more people putting themselves out there behind their product, whether it's the grower, whether it's the whatever, it's every one of those things ties back to a more hands-on artisanal approach, right? Yep. Like smaller craft.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I think this has been a great little chat.
Yeah, for sure.
And I definitely like to thank you, Blaine, for coming in.
You betcha.
And filling us, or being our interviewee or interviewer.
Part of the conversation.
Part of the conversation.
I like the trends.
Yeah. Anyways, if you have any comments about any of these trends or any of those things, please email us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. And we'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at The Edible Valley, on Facebook at The Edible Valley Podcast, and check out our, subscribe to Podbean and become a subscription, get a subscription to The Edible Valley Podcast and check it out.
Absolutely.
All right. And we'd definitely like to once again thank all our sponsors for helping support us and keeping this going.
Yeah. And thanks again, Blaine.
You betcha. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening.
The Atlas Cafe, celebrating 20 years in the Comox Valley. Globally inspired, locally sourced.
Do you like chocolate? I like chocolate.
IvansTruffles.com.